Thank you for joining us. I'm happy to have you here. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you became a part of the STEM community?
Yeah, so hi, thank you for having me. My name is Nirmina Brojak, and I am a chemistry PhD student at the University of Miami. So right now I'm in my fourth year. So I'm kind of in the part where I'm finishing up my project and thinking about starting my thesis and in that kind of part of my PhD program. So for me, the way I got started is, so I didn't really know I wanted to do a chemistry and PhD until like my third year of undergrad. Okay. And I feel like that's a story for most. So I wanted to go into medical school. So throughout high school and as a child, I wanted to become a cardiologist. So because of that, I went to undergrad with a STEM degree at least. So I majored in chemistry and I was like, oh, okay, I can transition into med school whenever. And it's easier if I know the harder part of the MCAT program and whatnot. So I did that, but then about 2 years in, I noticed that I wasn't really enjoying like the medical classes. I wasn't enjoying like the biology, the pre-med, the anatomy and physiology and whatnot. So then I had to like sit back and think like, okay, well, if I'm not enjoying the classes, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy this career. So then that summer, I started applying for a ton of different internships. And I did one, it's called REU. So it's a research experience for undergrads. And so I didn't get involved in research at my university, but this program basically lets you go to another university for a summer and pick up a research experience.
That's really cool.
And have a project. Yeah, and you get a stipend for the summer, and usually they let you stay in one of the dorms. So I got to go to Penn State, and at the time I was going to Florida State University. So it was a nice change of going to a different state.
Sorry, I just have a quick question about that program. Like, is it available only for folks in undergrad, or is it something that like when you're pursuing your graduate degree you can do as well?
Yeah, so I think it's just undergrad. So and it's usually for, I don't think there's any limitations. I think you just have to be in a four-year program. And it lets you kind of just explore other universities with the research. I definitely recommend it. I do think it helped me a lot into deciding if I want to go into research. So that summer I did a research project in nanotechnology, and that's kind of where I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I really liked working in the lab and I really enjoyed the science of it and the hands-on. So I was like, okay, I came back and I kind of changed my whole career path into wanting to go to graduate school.
Awesome. What initially got you, I mean, and you've always liked science, so you fell into that space, but what initially got you to reach out to that program? How did you find it?
So I don't remember. So I know in undergrad, I was a part of the chemistry club. So like the ACS chapter that was at my university. And I remember speaking to, because I still loved chemistry, even if I was wanting to go to pre-med. So I spoke to others and they were talking about this REU. So then I started looking it up, and I know NSF has a website where it has a list of all the REUs available online. Within the US. So through that, I just kind of clicked each one and applied. I think I applied to maybe 15 of them.
Oh yeah.
I just started sending out applications because I really wanted to do it. It sounded a lot of fun.
Yeah. I love that you found that. I mean, I was part of the ACS chapter in my school too, but certain resources for me, I guess I wasn't taking advantage of them, but that seems like a great program. So yeah, I love that you were able to find that and have community in your...
So right now I'm at University of Miami, and so my undergrad's in Florida State University. So I got stayed in Florida. But I think my path's a little different because I took some time off in between. So I took, I think it was about a year and a half. And so I moved back home, and I knew I wanted to go into graduate school. So I knew that was my goal, but I wanted to give myself time and break to kind of just breathe. And it was mainly because I made the decision to go to graduate school basically a few months before I graduated. So I needed the time to like really think about which school and what research and whatnot. And I felt like if I applied for the upcoming term, it would been too fast of a decision. And it's a decision that's for the next 5 years. So I didn't want to take it lightly. So I took the time off. I went home and I actually became a math teacher. So I kind of did that. I enjoyed it, but I kind of knew that it wasn't what I wanted to do. But it gave me the time to study for the GRE, which is needed for most graduate programs, not all, but I needed to take it. And then it also let me kind of see which research topic I wanted to go into and which professor I wanted to go. Because I think the idea behind me wanting to join UM specifically is because there were a few professors that I really enjoyed their research. So I think my advice is more of like, yes, look at the school and see if you want to go to that school, but more look at the type of research they have. So like, I really enjoyed UF, University of Florida, and I wanted to go there, but the research didn't really speak to me as much. So I kind of didn't apply there because even if I did accept it, I don't know which research group I would.
Yeah, because you're committing to a lot of time. And if you're not passionate mm-hmm. about the research, then it's like you're kind of wasting your time and their time. So during that time off, obviously, like as an adult, you still have to have a job. So that's why you started teaching. But what during that time helped you decide on a university and a specific program and a team that you want to do research with?
Yeah, so I think those are all super important things that you need to consider. So I, for me, again, it was the type of research that I wanted to do. So within each university website, they have professors, they have their own website. So then you can see a description of what their research is. And sometimes it's not always up to date. So what I ended up doing is I would look at that professor and see recent publications and see if those recent publications and see what kind of research that entailed. So that's what I was doing. And so I also knew that with the time off that I would have struggle transitioning back into being in academia again. Mm-hmm. So I would watch a lot of YouTube videos of lab techniques just so I could keep it refreshed. So I wouldn't forget how to use a pipette or just little things.
There's certain skills.
And especially another thing that I looked is within the research papers, there is a lot of instruments that are used. And so it's instruments that you kind of faintly learn in undergrad, but I ended up doing a lot more of like research of what each one does and the data that's outputted from it. So I remember
Dedicated. That's amazing.
I really wanted to transition back mainly because I knew that I wasn't going to be fresh. Mm-hmm. So I did research in undergrad, even after coming back from the research experience, but it was mainly in biology. So I knew that I didn't have a whole lot of chemistry research experience.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to kind of at least be exposed to it on my own before diving in.
Because you can use the same instruments in obviously both fields, but the way you interpret data is totally different when you're looking at what are you doing now as far as research and how did you land into your specific group?
Yeah, so my research is mainly in so I look at the binding affinity and the binding interaction of peptides onto different nanomaterials. And so I look at graphene and HBN. So
cool.
Thanks. So the peptides kind of bind differently and they have different shapes depending on which surface they're on and how they interact. So I basically use an instrument called quartz crystal microbalance, which measures like the frequency when something is absorbed. So then I can use that to kind of see if it sticks to the surface. And then I also do different modifications to the peptide to make the binding stronger or weaken it to kind of have a control over the binding.
That's very cool. And what drew you to that specific research when you were deciding?
Yeah, so I think I didn't really have a specific topic in mind that I wanted to do as I was joining. But I knew I wanted to do something with nanotech. And so I knew there's a few groups in my department that do nanotechnology, but this one specifically looked at graphene. And I just think graphene is so cool. And it seemed so novel, and it was like, okay, this, and it has a little bit of biology in it, so it wasn't pure chemistry, and it had a little, it's a little bit more application based. So that's also what I kind of liked, is being able to see somewhat of an output of the research that I'm doing. I might not be able to do the application based, but I can at least like see where it might end up.
Yeah, it's like a little bit more tangible than most research. Yeah. That's really cool. And I think everything you mentioned is really good advice. It's totally, I mean, everyone's experience when looking for a PhD program is obviously unique. Mm-hmm. There aren't many people in those programs, especially in STEM. So like hearing your story is also something that our listeners can, you know, kind of feel comfortable with. I think folks tend to not take time off and regroup, and they think that, like, you know, I'd rather, since it's going to be a commitment of 5 years, I'd rather just like kind of knock it out. Yeah. But it was smart of you to really take the time to prepare yourself, because now it makes the entire experience a little bit easier, the transition a little bit easier. What else? Like, did you connect with any of the teams? Were you able to like shadow anyone? Like, how did you finally settle into the space that you chose?
Yeah, so I didn't do any of that. I think mm-hmm. it, that time was a lot more of kind of like a self-reflections, kind of like self, like,
I love awareness that. Yeah.
For me. And I think it's also like in graduate school, you also have to teach a majority of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was also good, is that I picked up a job in a teaching space. So I first got hired as a tutor, and then I transitioned into a teacher. So I think that even just being in that kind of job experience helped me prepare in general, because you have to teach in undergrad yeah. Classes in graduate school.
You're already used to like a classroom setting and mm-hmm. curriculum setting. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And another thing I would suggest, so like if you can do tutoring because you have all this knowledge, I think it's really great. There's a lot of tutoring centers, or even like private tutoring can mm-hmm. kind of keep that knowledge of your chemistry going even between that period. So I recommend that during that time off, to even just have like a little side hustle for it.
Yeah.
But I also think if you pick up a hobby and kind of know like the balance of work and having your own personal time, because looking back, that's something I wish I did. I wish I picked up a hobby earlier on.
Like versus, unrelated to science, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like totally that you can have like a creative outlet, or just have something to unwind. And like, you don't have to be good at it. It could just be something yeah. that you like. And I think that's really good to carry into graduate school. So then you can make time to yourself that's not all about academia.
What do you do to unwind?
Yeah, so I kind of make sure that not everyone is able to do this, but I kind of make sure that I do not carry work home with me.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there's always going to be papers to read. There's always going to be a paper to write. And I kind of try to do as much as I can in lab and in my office. And then when 5 or 6 o'clock hits, I come home and I don't do much work home at home. And I try to save whatever task is for the next day, or try to do as much as I can before 5.
Yeah, that's a good boundary.
I know not everyone can do that, depending on their research and whatnot, but that's what's really helped me mm-hmm. is kind of being able to come home and not have anything to do.
Yeah. So, and I mean, you learn that too, like you're in your fourth mm-hmm. year. So, you know, the first year you're like acclimating to the space, you want to do everything. And then, you know, adulthood still has to happen, and partnerships and mm-hmm. friendships. So at some point you have to find your own rhythm, which I think happens even in, you know, professional settings. Folks need to learn to be very protective of their time and energy, because mm-hmm. like, you can't overexpend yourself in anything you do.
Yeah.
So I think that's good advice too, because I think for our spaces, like even in undergrad, we have so much, like the sheer volume of things as a person in STEM to do, between labs and courses and work and all of these things, it's easy to forget to take care of yourself. I mean, I remember yeah. staying up so late writing labs and getting up so early to go to classes. So it's yeah. definitely something to be protective of now, mm-hmm. so that you can implement that, like even in your adulthood. I really like that, because I think it's part of mental health too, that I think we really don't consider as professionals. So it's great that you've implemented some sort of system for yourself. So like a big thing that we talked about when we spoke the first time is a lot of our message is to promote STEM and get people, more folks involved in STEM, and at the very least, like get them interested in it and understand what our fields are so that people can understand your nanotechnology research and understand cosmetic science. So what do you think we should, what do you think we should be implementing in like school programs or undergraduate programs so that people know the resources that are available?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of at-home science experiments that people can do that like parents can do with their kids, and it doesn't require a lot of like outsourced chemistry, like chemicals. So there's a lot of food chemistry that you can do with your kids that I think is really good, and it really helps them get super excited because they see like, oh, this is what I eat and it could also do this. And so I think that helps excite them. And I think even just cooking alone, like doing all the measurements for cooking and like doing the math that comes with it. And just, I think that helps like get them thinking into like a scientific analytical kind of part. But I also think like if there's also local science museums, they're always having some kind of science or summer program and whatnot, and a lot of the times they have free programs or at least like free little demos that they do that could also be accessible. I think just for me, it just exposing kids or just others in science constantly, even if that's not what they want to do, I think it's also good to have that exposure.
Yeah, that general awareness. Really, yeah. What in your growing up made you go into science as an undergrad?
Yeah, so I don't think I really had too much. So like I come from a small country in Bosnia. So I moved here as an immigrant, and it was really different because my mom was just trying to work and provide for her family. So having like the time to expose me to science was different than others maybe. So I wasn't really exposed to as much science as a kid, just due to the circumstances. So I think it was mainly in high school that my chemistry teacher really helped me enjoy it. And she taught it in a way that was very, really relatable and kind of just showing real life applications and just so like introducing how it's science is in everything and chemistry is in everything that we use. So that really made me like open my mind and think about, oh, okay, well, what can we do with that?
Yeah.
So that helped a lot.
Those high school science teachers, I there's a few that like, I wish I could like write them an email or find them and have like a conversation with them. Like you don't even realize the impression you left on my life. And like, I have a whole career now because of your influence.
Exactly.
It's so cool. So when you were teaching, what group of children did you teach?
Yeah, so I taught math, and I basically taught for a small like private school, and it was mainly with kids that had learning disabilities. It was more smaller groups. So I taught like elementary math, and then I also taught like pre-algebra, geometry, and algebra. It was three to four people.
That's really cool. Because you never know what kind of impression as an educator you place on folks. I think that's really cool. I mean, education is something that I don't think I've ever even considered, given that like we can do it with our degrees. I just never thought about it. But it is a good way to also stay involved in like some of those, you know, there's problems in trig and quantum that I probably will never do again, but I know I can like brush it up if I need to. I love the advice that you give. And I think that your story is unique in the fact that the passion's always been there. And what you've done is just found your own route to get there. And I think that shows a lot of perseverance. And a lot of our listeners, you know, they come from different backgrounds, they come from different spaces and find their way into STEM just like we did. So what advice would you give to folks that maybe had the same limited resources that you and myself had, and obviously thank God for high school, but like, what would you say to maybe like a younger version of yourself when you're developing like this passion for what you're doing?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is And one thing that I've kind of struggled with is it's totally okay to just ask for help, and it's okay that like you don't know something. So like in high school, I didn't know how to apply for college. I didn't know the whole process. So I think the biggest thing is like you don't know, but there might be someone who does, or at least leads you to someone who does. So like go to your guidance counselor and just say, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Can you help me, or can you at least send me to a website that might, like, it's so good to just ask for help. And I think it's, people think that it shows weakness or it's intimidating to like ask someone who might know more than you, but I think it shows a lot of the person that you are that is able to ask for help when you don't know something. And I definitely recommend, like, even at any level, even still right now, I'm in my fourth year, and there was an instrument last week that I've never used. And the first year that is in, there's this girl, she's a first year in my lab, and she helped me figure it out.
Yeah.
So it's more of like, it doesn't matter at what stage you are, you can always ask for help, and there will be someone that will help you. And they don't think twice about it. They won't think or like think, oh, they don't know. So
yeah,
they're going to be happy to share that information with you.
Like something you're dreading asking, and they're like, sure, no problem. And you're like, why didn't I just ask in the first place?
And you just spent like a week figuring out how to even ask them.
Yeah. It's so weird how we could do that to ourselves.
Exactly.
What advice would you give to young women to pursue STEM specifically?
Yeah. So specifically young women. So I think it's, I mean, hopefully it's changing a little bit more now, but I think it's, if you're a young woman in STEM, I definitely recommend getting a mentor. So I think sometimes it's hard to be like a lower and like one of the fewer women in your science classes or just in your program or whatnot. I think it might slightly be changing a little bit, but I think there is a difference of seeing yourself in class, but then the people above you are still not a strong representation of women. So I think it's a little discouraging to see women in the level that you are now, but not above you. So I think if you find and meet a woman in STEM that's a little bit above you, go and ask if they can be your mentor and kind of help you guide your way. So then you can also see that representation of a higher level position that you might want to strive for one day.
Yeah, so I
definitely recommend that.
Yeah, and you're right. It is hard to find folks that are in those leadership positions and folks that are in the decision-making positions that may be representative of like us or like where even communities, specific communities. I mean, it's good advice. I wouldn't know where to start to find a mentor, but it's kind of like in those random meetings or like attending trade shows sometimes, but it is kind of hard to find someone.
And I think you can find, like, it doesn't have to be in person. I know a lot of times you can also connect with people on LinkedIn, and you can just send someone a message to say, hey, I really admire your work and your position. Do you have any advice? And you can just kind of start it off like that. Just even on LinkedIn that you see someone. I think that's also a way
that's
to do
good
it.
Advice.
It's hard also like with everything now of in person being so limited that you can also, there's a space out there that you can also try online.
Yeah, I've seen the growth of LinkedIn as more of like an interactive space and less intimidating. I think for a long time, like it was like very professional and very black and white, but now it's like a space where you can speak a little bit more like socially. You can kind of interact with them in a different way, which is helpful. But I never thought to even look to that space to find a mentor. I think that's one thing I wish I did do when I was in my undergrad. I wish I had a specific person that I could go to and ask questions about just the overall application process. I did a lot of internships, so I learned a lot about the professional setting, but I do wish I had taken the time to learn a little bit more about my opportunities with my degree. And having a mentor, they would be like, hey, this is like all the stuff I know because I'm in it.
Yeah. And I think a mentor doesn't even have to be someone that's so much above you. So I truly think that when I first started my first year of graduate school, I looked at one of the girls that is in my group now that graduated as a mentor. So even though she's like
experienced it.
She's not too far ahead of me. I still see her as a mentor because she gives me advice. So like, it doesn't have to be, or it could just even be a classmate that you kind of see that they've had a little bit more experience, you can ask them. That's
yeah.
also another.
Just someone to lean on for different understanding too. Like, like you said earlier, I think sometimes we're intimidated to ask for help because we think that we should just know, or just even the spaces we're in, like, you know, it is intimidating to be the only person in the room that doesn't understand certain things. And like kind of shedding away that fear of looking dumb or something. It's like, everyone, I think Jasmine said it in our last podcast. She's like you can have people that are professionals and exceptional in their skill level, but that's like all they'll ever know. So like they still have to seek understanding from other people in different fields. So being open to ask those questions and not being afraid of asking those questions is definitely something that I think is universal to people. Cause when you're, you know, when you're starting out, it's very intimidating to find your footing. So,
And I think even just finding like a support group. So even just finding classmates that you can just talk to and just kind of relate to, I think also helps.
So I want to just go through the last few questions, if that's okay. Yeah. Or if there's anything else that you want to share, like feel free to add it in. I appreciate how like honest and candid you've been with us. I think it'll be really well received given that a lot of folks are thinking of pursuing PhD programs now since we are remote. I think folks are just thinking like, maybe I'll just stay in academia a little bit longer since, you know, the workforce is it's all very confusing given the height of the pandemic, but I've seen a lot of our listeners, whether they're in like workspaces and considering going back to school or pursuing specific research because it's just something they've always been interested in. So I think your advice will go a long way with our listeners. So I would love to hear more about what your ultimate goals are with your PhD program and like how you're going to settle into the professional setting.
Yeah, so I feel like I should have a direct answer and have it all figured out.
It's okay if you don't. You're only on your fourth year. It's okay. You have time.
Yeah, I really don't know. I think I'm open to both. So like in chemistry, there's really kind of a limited amount of paths you can take. So there's academia and then there's industry. So I think for me, I'm open to academia. And doing a post, so with that, it would be like a postdoc and then going into being a professor or a lecturer or having your own lab in a research university or going into industry. But then within industry, there's a lot of different paths you can take. You can do consulting, you can become R&D, and you can do product. I forgot the word, but like product.
So there's a the claims part where you're like the expert. Yes.
Or even just there's even patent to help working on patents. So there's so many different fields, and I don't know which one I want to do just yet. And I think I don't know if I'll know until I start applying for them and seeing which one catches my eye. So I'm kind of open to it. But
yeah,
those are
it's
the
also
kind of paths.
Your research could change in a year. So like you could find yourself, you know, finding something that might lead you to a completely different path or open up a new door that wasn't there before. So you still have a lot of time.
Yeah.
But what was your goal for you when you applied to school? Long-term kind of thought.
And I think for me, it's always been, I want to work in a lab.
Okay.
And hopefully stay in a lab. But even if I don't end up working in a lab all the time, but at least managing and helping progress a specific project. So that could be in academia as a PI, as a principal investigator, or in an industry with a specific topic or a research R&D kind of project continuing that forward. So I think it doesn't matter to me. I want to stick with nanotechnology. So I think that's always been the goal for me. And I would love to go into either like water desalination or water purification. I think I would really enjoy that, going into some kind of aspect of that.
Yeah.
Or even just like medical devices.
There's a lot of innovation in medical devices. Yeah. Especially with the technology that you have hands-on expertise with. That's really cool.
And
then it's still back to what you were kind of doing. You found your full circle, sort of.
Yeah, I'm hoping at least. So
yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I don't know anyone. I mean, obviously, like in STEM, we know different folks that work in different spaces, but I haven't spoken to anyone other than you regarding specific research in nanotechnology. So I think that's super exciting. Like as a geek, I'm just like, that's so cool. I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something that's unique to you because I don't know many people that work in that space and provide even research and to allow for innovation in that space. So what's the goal of your research group for understanding how these peptides work?
Yeah, so there's a few different applications. So kind of that's how kind of like chemistry research is you might not see the output or the application yourself. But I think kind of the knowledge that we can find is the interaction of the peptides then can be further like as engineers or whatnot to create like different devices in which that can detect different peptides. And so seeing how the peptide binds differently, then you can detect if it's there. And that's one way, or just transistors, because graphene and HBN are very different. And those are the two materials I look at. HBN is hexagonal boron nitride. And so one is an insulator and one's a capacitor. So it's kind of seeing that electrochemistry interaction that can be used for like devices, like field effect transistors and just different electrochemical things. Cool. But I personally might not see any of that.
But you understand the goal of the application. But that's very cool. I'm only asking because I don't understand. So I wanted to know a little bit more.
It's okay.
So there's only two questions that I ask all of my guests at the end. And I think it's usually the part where, you know, we get the most advice from you guys. So one of them is, what's the best piece of advice you wish you could have given your undergraduate self?
So I think is kind of going back to what we were talking about with asking for help. But I think one big thing is also finding your support group is that's something I wish that I did even in undergrad. And I think it's, I don't know, sometimes it's hard to find your support group because like my friends weren't in STEM. And then when I did try to find my friends and try to make friends in STEM, it felt a little bit intimidating for me because I wasn't an A student. I was a C. C's
me too.
Kind of student.
Me too. So, yeah, so I wasn't part of their study groups at all. Like they were just a different level.
Yes, but I kind of wish that I did, even if I didn't, wasn't on their level. So that's kind of what like advice that I would have given myself is just insert yourself into it, and even if you don't know, but to like still be involved at least once.
Yeah.
To have that interaction.
I can relate to that. I felt intimidated, but I never really inserted myself in like their study groups because I did it once and I was so intimidated by the fact that they understood so much more and so much faster. So I did kind of retreat myself when it came to that. And that's probably what like kept me as a C student. Cause like, if you interact with people that understand, they're going to help you learn, but I let myself like feel intimidated by asking those questions. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a good thing to think about in your undergrad because it is all intimidating. I mean, it's the first time you've ever left your house sometimes, and now you're living in a new space and finding folks that you can, that one are your program. So they relate to almost everything you're doing and you can go to when there's lack of understanding when it comes to like instrumentations or research or even just like what the hell the nomenclature is. Cause sometimes that can get tricky too.
Exactly. Looking back now, I've also like kind of learned is everyone's good at something different. So like they might have known something at the topic at that moment, but there's also something that I might have known that could have helped them, but it didn't seem like I could help them.
Yeah, so kind of getting in your own way is tough during that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard.
So wishing I could shake all of that off in undergrad.
Yeah, I'd do it totally different now. Like even with my professors, I should have reached out to them more, but I was again intimidated by my lack of understanding. And I shouldn't have been afraid to ask those questions like you mentioned earlier. Later in my undergrad, like junior year, I started taking advantage of those office hours, but I could kick myself because I should have been doing it the whole time. And for whatever reason, I was just afraid to admit that I didn't understand. which
exactly
is so stupid.
Yeah, I wish so as well, because I went to a large university, so like the Gen Chem was 100 plus students, so I felt like I was just a number. But looking back, like, I wish that I went to the professors more and just asked for help and just showed up a little bit more. That would have helped a lot.
Yeah, it would have helped. And it did, because I started my undergrad as a true C student. And then, like, once I started taking advantage of those resources and kind of allowed myself to, like, not be afraid to ask, I was able to bring my grades up and I was able to finish strong. But it is something that I do regret. I wish I had asked for more advice and, like, been comfortable with my pace. Like, maybe I didn't have to take all the same classes everyone did, and I just need to talk to somebody about it. And, like, having the community to speak to folks, I just, like, I isolated myself for no reason. So definitely good advice for an undergraduate student. It's all intimidating. It's all new. Everyone's felt everything you've felt. Most of the time, even the people that look like they have it together are feeling the same thing.
Exactly.
So yeah, take the time to like not isolate yourself in those feelings. And I hope that that's what this podcast does too. Like, if you have something that you've been curious about, or even this specific thing, like, as you're, like, as you're going back to school and undergraduate programs, I can't imagine what it's like with the pandemic, but I'm sure there's a lot that people haven't been able to learn well or understand well. And going back into the academic setting, it's like, just don't assume everyone is smarter than you. Like, go ahead and ask, and everyone's in the same place. None of us know what we're doing. I still don't always know what I'm doing.
Exactly.
I still have to lean on other people for understanding. So if you implement that in your undergrad, you're probably going to have a lot more success moving forward. So I love that piece of advice. And then the last question I ask folks is, what's the best piece of professional advice that you've been given that you still live by?
Yeah, so I think it's, so I think one professor in undergrad told me that you're never going to know everything, and everyone has different strengths. So, like, for me, I am not a good test taker. So I am not good at sitting down and learning a lot of information and being tested on it. But I know I'm good at the lab reports, and I know I'm good at, like, the papers and whatnot. So everyone has strengths and skills in different areas, and every, like, your path is different than others. So, like, even though I didn't get those A's in undergrad, but I knew that I got A's in the lab reports, and I knew I could do the labs very easily compared to others. So I think it was just not to compare myself to others that did get the A's, because I don't know how they were in the labs. So I think it's just knowing what your strengths are and understanding that they might be different than others.
That's really
something
advice
that I still look at now.
Yeah. And it can be applied, again, like, almost everything we've described today is just about kind of getting out of your own head about things and trusting that, like, sometimes it's okay to be unique and find your space. That's awesome. I appreciate you. This has been a lot of fun and really insightful for me. I mean, I've got a lot of time on my hands now, so it's great to hear from you guys to see, like, what other options are out there for folks who have a degree in STEM. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before I let you go?
Yeah, I mean, I have my Instagram. It's Piece of Chemistry. And if you have any more questions, you can definitely reach out and just send me a message. I'd love to help anyone that has any questions. Just anything.
And that's another great way to just build community too. Like, if there's something that you're interested in, and as far as our listeners, even if you're in the Florida area and you're looking, I'm sure you've already vetted almost every university. So even if you've got questions about the application process or anything, all of our guests have been really, really generous with their time and information. So don't be afraid to reach out to us. Also, you know, your content is really interesting. That's how we found each other. So I highly recommend that folks go check it out.
I have LinkedIn. I'm not on the Twitter space just yet. I'm on it, but I don't use it.
Yeah.
But I think the Instagram and LinkedIn, I think, are the two best options.
I appreciate you and your time. This has been a lot of fun. If we do get questions, it would be great to have you back on and address maybe our listeners' questions directly since you come from a different space of STEM and you can provide an understanding that I'm just not aware of, extend that to them now. Like if you guys have any questions for us regarding your specific technology, living in your space, or even just the application process of a PhD, feel free to let us know and maybe we'll have you back on to address everyone's questions.
I'd love that. That would
be awesome. That's awesome. Thank you. So thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. We'll have you guys back and listening later.
Thank you.